You've always been your own dealer. I mean, you're the way that you, like, in not a sense like an old-fashioned dealer, whatever that means.
Yes, but I was going to ask you
what yes. that means to you in terms of, you know, like...
Well, first of all, this is not a corporation,
yeah.
obviously.
Uh-huh.
It's a company that works with the elements that mm-hmm. we have, mm-hmm. the artists,
mm-hmm.
The space, in a very individual way.
Mm-hmm.
But then we also have a way of expanding, of course, because mm-hmm. We do send our artists out all over the world. It was something, actually, that was rather typical of this gallery in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
We would not jealously keep the artists here. We wanted them to be seen
mm-hmm.
in the rest of the country, California especially,
mm-hmm.
Chicago, and also in Europe,
mm-hmm.
especially in Paris, in Germany,
mm-hmm.
London. And so in that sense, from a relatively small core, there was a great deal of activity there all over the globe. And I had the help of various
mm-hmm.
other galleries,
mm-hmm.
museums too.
Mm-hmm.
One very important person in my life, in assisting me
mm-hmm.
in showing American artists abroad was Ileana Sonovich, my
mm-hmm.
former wife.
Mm-hmm.
She had set up a gallery, after we divorced, she set up a gallery in Paris. And back in 1960, early on, she did show there Jasper Johns and Rauschenberg and Andy Warhol and
mm-hmm.
Lichtenstein
mm-hmm.
and all these artists that I was showing here.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result of which they got to be known sooner than say the abstract expressionists who had not been promoted
sure.
in the same way. So there were, speaking of that question of
mm-hmm.
being
yeah.
my own master,
mm-hmm.
proposals here and there during my career to expand the activity, join other people with more capital, but I always worked with my own money. Well, of course, like everybody else, I had bank loans. But apart from that, I've never been supported, as some galleries are, quite a number of them, as a matter of fact, by
mm-hmm.
outside people.
Mm-hmm.
We always sort of managed to survive with our own with our own needs. Well, we were very lucky because at least at one point, until the market started to spoil 3 or 4 years ago,
mm-hmm.
We had artists that could be sold for high prices
mm-hmm.
that permitted us to really expand our activity
mm-hmm.
by publishing, well, doing
mm-hmm.
Ever better shows with good announcements, good catalogs, like the one that I'm going to give you. Say that
uh-huh.
that was done already in a period of terrible
mm-hmm.
crisis, but it was
mm-hmm.
worth doing. The Jasper Johns catalog.
Yes, oh great. Uh-huh.
That Susan
mm-hmm.
Was especially
mm-hmm.
Good at putting together.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something that's done. Well, of course, the activity has its regularity. We have to plan the shows in advance. But then I think that we have to reinvent ourselves all the time.
Yes.
At one point, when we opened that gallery on Green Street,
mm-hmm.
that was really quite an invention. At that time, not much was going on. There were no new artists that appeared upon the scene, and
mm-hmm.
so we tried to do something else, show very large works like the Liechtenstein mural, and
yes,
pieces of Job and Kelly and especially Sarah, who in the end provoked the collapse.
Yes, I remember that. Yes.
Of the space. So we try to reinvent ourselves all the time. Mm-hmm. There's, for instance, the space that we have on Broadway, at 578 Broadway, which was supposed to be a print gallery. Now the print market collapsed. So we tried to do something else with it.
Mm-hmm.
My accountant said it was useless, should get rid of it. But then he didn't figure out the fact that it was a very good storage space there, and it would have been more costly to move all the things that we had there and still go on also showing things that are difficult to sell from our inventory without having a space where to show them. So we started inventing shows there, which were quite amusing, taking advantage of what he had. For instance, there was a show of minimal art. Then there was a show of objects in art, and it was called Object. We gave them all those titles. They're called Object Lessons. Then there was a show where words were important, like paintings of Boucher, of Kossuth, and others. And it was called Word Play. And then the recent one, we just wanted to show, the idea was to show Feltz by Robert Morris, of which we had a number. And then we looked for other soft things that might fit into the show, and we found early work of Kissonier, he had soft things, and then Rauschenberg had soft things. So there, it's a show that's on now, and it's called Software.
So oh, that's great, yeah.
They all have their title.
It's a great title.
The fact that
very up-to-the-minute title.
So, anyway, we try to invent things in this time of crisis so that we can survive. I sell lots of things that I would have liked to keep, that were part of, say, my collection. But they have to be sold now because we have to find enough money to keep the gallery going. I haven't laid off any of my people, or practically none. It was always something that I was incredibly reluctant to do. So I saved the spaces, I saved my personnel when practically everybody, I think, has been laid off.
Absolutely.
We haven't done anything of the kind so far, and it seems sort of foolish. As long as we can survive, we'll survive without trying not to make anybody suffer.
And when you say selling off things in your personal collection, those were, in other words, in a sense, you're deaccessioning.
I've deaccessioned my collection.
Right.
I've even sold recently a very important painting that I really didn't intend to deaccession. But again, I felt uncomfortable without any, reserves, and so that had to go overboard. Fortunately, that's just incidental. During the lifetime of my wife, she died 5 years ago, more than 5 years ago, she always felt that our son, who's now 29, should acquire paintings and have a collection for his security, his future. And so she bought important paintings for him, which are his own. So that actually, since he doesn't particularly care having them in his relatively modest loft, he lives still alive of a student a little bit. He's a writer, film scriptwriter. So I have, fortunately, all these paintings in my apartment. Well, not all of them, but most of them are still there at my disposal. So that I don't. It doesn't look that as if I nothing anymore.
So that was the that beautiful painting in the John's painting, the target.
The target with plaster casts. It's called the target with plaster casts. Yeah. And that's gone now recently. Mm. Yeah. Mm.
Fantastic. Yeah. Work that was.
That hung in my home for 35 years, except for occasional shows. Mm-hmm. It's been there with me for 35 years. So there, success of my gallery started with my first Jasper Johns show in 58. Mm-hmm. So that 35 years later, my relationship with him has come full circle, and that painting that I acquired 35 years ago, well, had to be sacrificed.
Yeah. There is a nice connection to that.
There's a nice connection. Mm-hmm. It has served its purpose, aesthetically and otherwise, and now it had to go. So that there are still some very nice paintings by Jasper Johns, by Rauschenberg, Andy Warhol, and others in my apartment, but they don't belong to me. They belong to myself.
And
who doesn't claim them?
Yes, that's great. Now, what do you remember? What I'm sure you do. What would that Johns have in that first show? What were the
You want to know how much?
Yeah.
At that time, the paintings of Johns were from about $300 for smaller things, pastels and so on. Drawings were even less, about $100, $150. Mm-hmm. Up to the most expensive painting in the show, it was arbitrary, of course, was a large white flag that Jasper still owns, and that's now on loan at the National Gallery.
Leo?
Excuse me.
Sure.
Hello. Yes. On loan at the National Gallery.
I just saw that, actually.
You probably saw
it. I was just there
recently. That was $2,000. Then that famous target with plaster cast, we made $1,200. And then there were others, like, for instance, the one that, the small target with plaster cast at MoMA, that was $600. And the flag that MoMA has now, which I had in my show here, was $1,000, and we then gave Philip Johnson, who bought it, 10% discount, so it was $900. I insured it when it was here. I got it on loan here for my 35-year show, and they asked me to insure it for $15 million.
The one that, the flag?
The flag, yes. The flag that belongs to MoMA.
Yeah.
I have a similar one. Which is, however, a later one. It's from 58, and that hangs now on loan at the Whitney and at the Guggenheim downtown here, Guggenheim Soho. And that's insured for $10 million. It belongs to my son. It's not for sale. That's one of the things that belong to him. So that was the price range. I actually bought the target with plaster cast at that time, and gave, although really at the time our agreement was a 50-50 agreement, it would have been $600, I felt sort of that I wanted to give the whole price for it, so I paid it $1,200. If I had sold it to any client, it would have been less, because I would have given them a discount, you see. So I paid a very high price for it. Well, then what in our activity here, what's sort of so important is that we have a very democratic kind of way of doing things here. There is never anything that I say, we do it that way without consulting my personnel. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, we agree about what to do, and then everything's fine. Sometimes I disagree, and if I feel that I'm right, then I do it anyway. And there is, some resistance to it. On other occasions, I feel that what I propose is not really as mm-hmm. good as I thought. Mm-hmm. And they come up with other ideas which I think are better, and so I accept their ideas. So it's really a give and take that occurs mm-hmm. here. Actually, I don't sit here mm-hmm. in this office mm-hmm. in splendid isolation. I'm always there with them. Mm-hmm. So we know all the time what's going mm-hmm. on. Mm-hmm.
In fact, it was interesting because Susan was giving the example of, say, because I had asked her about, you know, the Gagosian Gallery uptown and yeah. everything, all the doors are closed yes. and everyone's by
well, the... Yeah, I think that's rather unique, this gallery here. There's no other gallery except very small ones.
Right.
Well, that size.
Yeah.
That's so open as ours, you know, where everybody can come and go.
Right.
Well, I like it that way, and I wouldn't want to to change it. Well, Susan, mm-hmm. she probably told you, has been here more than 20 years.
Before. Yeah.
Her sister, something like 13 years, and Michael has been a young man over there
yes.
at least 7 or 8 years, and then Mary Jo was not here today, at least another mm-hmm. 12 years. Mm-hmm. So,
and you have people that have gone on to become well, dealers.
The most interesting thing was that some people had gone on mm-hmm. and had become, mm-hmm. had their own galleries, mm-hmm. like one of the best ones, certainly, is Metro Pictures.
Yes.
Janelle, who is one of the owners of Metro Pictures, mm-hmm. was here for several years, and for me it was a terrible disaster when she,
yeah.
when she left, of course. Then somebody like Morgan, for instance, went away and opened his own gallery, which he closed.
Yes.
And many others. There were many volunteers here. We have volunteers all the time here, at least 3 or 4, who used their stay here for credits. Mm-hmm. And many of them have gone on to some career mm-hmm. or other in the art world. This is a very good school here. They all want to, uh-huh. everybody wants to come here and
yes.
work here. They learn a lot, precisely because it's such an open gallery and they see what's going on. There's no secrets around here.
And so the other thing that Susan was saying that I thought was interesting, that and I had forgotten this, but I remember this is a long time, like sometime in the 80s, there were all of these articles, the Hellman, Blum Hellman, they were trying to get your artist.
Oh yes, there was a bunch of, yeah.
There were articles about you and Mary Boone.
Yes.
The new, you know,
yeah.
kid on the block.
Yeah, it was a sort of a period where mm-hmm. Lots of galleries, young galleries, mm-hmm. prior to younger galleries, and also...
You have, and she's not in your book. She's not in your book.
Oh, just, it seems that even though...
Oh, yes, that troubled time, well, the troubled time is still around,
yeah.
less so, because nobody can afford to lure away artists offering fantastic sums of money. No, we work with Mary Boone, we work together on
yeah.
two important artists, Schnabel and Sully, that was cooperative. She then got Archvager
yeah.
from me, but again, that was a personal thing. She mm-hmm. really would not have taken him away from me. He got mad at me for some reason, mm-hmm. Susan may have explained it to you, and wanted to leave the gallery, and then mm-hmm. he decided that he would like to go to mm-hmm. Mary's, and, mm-hmm. and Mary phoned me quite loyally telling me the story. The others just take them away and don't tell you a thing. But would I want to share him, or what mm-hmm. would I want to do? So I said, well, I'd be very happy to share him, but then he mm-hmm. really doesn't want to be with me because he's mad at me.
Yeah.
Now he's coming back. We were supposed to have lunch yesterday. Uh-huh. I don't know what he wants.
uh-huh. To mend fences.
No, but we won't speak about that because I haven't got the biggest idea. I mean, it was just a friendly...
Yes,
friendly,
yes. Friendly. But you never exactly felt threatened enough to say, I'm not having anything to do with, you know,
well,
X, Y, Z.
Well, I was annoyed. Mm-hmm. I was annoyed at Blum, at Hellman.
Sure.
Then.
Yeah.
he was not so instrumental in
doing.
I was annoyed at Helmut at the time, and we had very difficult times together. Mm-hmm. Then also the Pace Gallery had been luring all kinds of artists away from galleries like Paula Cooper. My own, in the sense that we shared Oldenburg at one point, and then, well, for some reason, Oldenburg decided that he wanted to be only there. Then they got Serra at one point, but Serra never really went. Serra's with many galleries at the same time, with them, with me, with Larry Bogosian, so he never was anybody. Well, to begin with, he was really my artist, but then he spread. Well, that's all. That's about all.
But you're not, you don't, it seems that you sort of just embrace it, or you're not that, you know, upset in terms of...
No, one isn't upset because it's life. People, you know, it's the same thing that happens in marriage, that happens in relationships between people.
Yeah.
For one reason or another, they feel that perhaps I don't do such a good job, or that their market, let's use that awful word, would be expanded if they went to some other guy, that I don't sell them well enough, that perhaps somebody else would do better than them, which is often the case, you know, you have to recognize the facts of life.
And maybe just the, and I'm kind of curious, what do you think of, I mean, what do you think of Larry Gagosian? What is that style?
A curious phenomenon.
Yeah.
He's, incredibly active, very intelligent, has an incredibly good judgment about what's good, what's important, who the important painters are, the works that are good. He also, you know, has a way of big corporate clients, which I have not, you know. He knows how to deal with very rich people, which I don't. I've just remained the same as I usually was. I've not, into somebody else that I'm not.
Right. And in that same way, you're not... It's your personality more than anything
else.
I will only personally
sell paintings to clients, people that I know, that I like, that I would like to have. I would never recommend something. I'm a very bad salesman, in other words. And he is a very good salesman. But of course, he would be as scrupulous as I am, advising one of his clients not to buy a painting because it's not really good enough for them. Well, nobody does that practically.
And so, in terms of, are there, where would you, I mean, in terms of, there was all this speculation because, you know, where will all of these great American artists go if, you know...
When you leave the scene, yeah,
or...
Yeah, sure, of course, it has to be envisaged.
Yeah.
Well, I think the gallery cannot really continue in the same way without me, but it can continue for quite a while, I think. Susan has the whole thing very well in hand. She really knows the ins and outs of the gallery, and she could run this gallery. What the artists will do, well, probably artists like Liechtenstein or Jasper Johns won't mind staying with her. I wouldn't be surprised, because they are handled very well here. They know that she is very. I think the gallery can continue. There's something that I'm thinking about very often.
Sure.
Actually, I would like to arrange things in such a way that it can continue with the present personnel. But God knows,
sure,
it's possible. But I would tend to want to do that. Not say, well, once I'm gone, let's forget about it.
Right.
people will say, and Susan herself will say, mm-hmm. oh, that it won't be possible without you. But mm-hmm. now I think that she becomes perhaps more convinced that she can do it. She has acquired a great deal of assurance lately, and she may be able to do, if not the same thing, but maintain an important gallery with the same people here that mm-hmm. are around her sister, mm-hmm. Mike, and so on. It can be done. Although, evidently, there is no capital in this gallery. There are lots of, some of the artists, of course, good artists, like, say, Kossuth or
sure.
others of which, Flavin, of which we have a lot of material, don't sell so well. So there is no capital. They have to just rely on, as we do, we've always done on day-to-day operation.
Well, as Susan says, she says that everyone will jump on a funeral pyre is what her, I mean, in her joking kind
of,
joking, in that sort of, you know, India where the...
Well, what did she say that she thought that she could run the gallery without me?
Oh, no, she didn't say anything like that.
Because I think she could.
Yeah.
She is getting more and more confident. Mm-hmm. And I would be very happy. Well, I would try to arrange things in such a way that to make it possible for her, but I think she could.
That's great because the, so right now in terms of you have, you're basically doing the same style that you were when you first started Uptown.
It's exactly the same. Mm-hmm. It hasn't changed. It has become, it sort of blew up to very large proportions because, well, of course, business was so good, so so prosperous. I think we were selling something like $20 million worth of paintings, something like that, at the time, at the height of the market. And then, of course, we remained...
In a... What kind of period of time? Like,
No, $10 million a year. I think in perhaps... the turnover, say, in the best years, like 89, 90,
it
must have been something like $20 million. I can't give you a precise figure,
sure.
but it was a large figure.
That's great. So it's good that I'm going to let you go.
Yes, I have to go now.
But that's great.
If you want to speak some more with Susan to complete.